All right, we'll continue talking with William Sheehan about his work, Bigfoot Terror in the Woods, but we'll also take your phone calls and share some of your stories with us next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. William Sheehan with us. William, the abominable snowman, the Yeti from the Himalayas, is that the same as the Bigfoot we talk about here in North America?
I don't believe so. Although I'll tell you something really interesting. I had an account that was told to me by, of all things, a Russian professor who was out hiking with his landscaper that he had befriended because of his vast knowledge of things botanical. And they formed this unlikely friendship and turned that into a hiking partnership. They had run across a couple of Bigfoots messing around with some trees in the woods, and they got close enough to them where they could hear them jabbering. And the professor said that it sounded like a Siberian dialect that he was unfamiliar with. Now, this is a Russian-speaking immigrant saying that what he was hearing sounded like some type of Russian that he was unfamiliar with. So when you talk about the Yeti and the abominable snowman, it's hard not to think of the land bridge that was once there above the Bering Sea. And did these things or had these things go back and forth? I have no idea. But it was just really unusual to hear this gentleman speak about this odd dialect. Now, other people have said they've heard voices. I had a couple that was canoeing in Minnesota, and they pulled the canoe up on a piece of the lake where they thought it looked clear and they could sit in there and rest for a little while. And they ran across some Sasquatch and a tree structure in there. They were unseen by them. They walked by through the trees. They heard them jabbering. And they said it sounded like when you stand at the counter in a Chinese restaurant and they're shouting orders back and forth to each other. So it's very, very odd. But as far as the Yeti and the abominable snowman, I have no idea. I have Sanderson's book, The Abominable Snowman Come to Life.
Yeah.
And, you know, that thing is like reading an encyclopedia on the creature. And yet, getting back to what I said earlier, none of this stuff means anything to the majority of people around the globe. That book is a hoax. All of my stuff is a hoax. All of the conversations about Bigfoot are a hoax. The film is a hoax. All of the dermal ridges on the footprints taken, everything's a hoax to them. So, you know, we have to just keep doing what we do in spite of what the majority of the people out there think about us. And that's one of the things I love about Coast. You know, we all tune in because we're hearing things that we can't get in other locations. Nobody's talking about what you're talking about.
UFOs and Bigfoot encounters. Where's the tie-in?
Well, I've had a couple of them. One of them I called the Dead Falls incident. But one that I'll share with you was named the Orb. And it's really interesting. These three scout leaders had four young boys that were all working on their Eagle Scout badge. And they decided to take them to this mountainous area in Pennsylvania to do a weekend of survival training. On the first day, they were pretty much focusing on building huts, lean-tos, and different things like that. And on the second day, their focus was on that of getting attention, being saved. So they were spending their time in an open area, spelling out the words help and SOS, using branches and boughs, and then they were making smoky fires using green boughs. And that night, they decided to go on a night hike to see what it was like navigating around in the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, during the day, they had climbed up the side of the mountain to look down and see what they had made, to see what it looked like from a higher elevation. And they had gone up into the same area at night for the hike. Well, when they got up there, it turns out that the one scout leader was a UFO enthusiast, which was very bizarre considering what you're about to hear. He had a pair of military-grade night vision binoculars or a monocular that he had brought along. Now, when they get up into the trail, one of the kids says, "Hey, what's that?" And they noticed in the distance a light moving around in the woods. Now, of course, their first instinct was it's somebody with a flashlight or, you know, a battery-operated lantern. But then they realized that this thing started to dart around in a crazy fashion, which immediately told all of them, this is no human being, and what it is, we don't know. So they started moving closer. As they got closer, they got the night vision on it, and they could see now that it was an orb, a round, bluish-white light moving around in the forest. And now this really had their attention, so they got even closer. They were trying to get ever closer to it. They didn't know how big it was because they didn't know how far away they were from it. Finally, they got to a place where they believed they were about 75 yards away from it. And when they put the night vision on it, they could see that it was about 2 feet wide, bluish-white orb. It was about 10 or 12 feet off the ground, and it was illuminating the trees around it.
Right.
So now they're passing the...
It was that bright.
Yeah. I mean, it's a glowing orb of light darting around in the forest, and now it's sitting stationary. And what happens next is absolutely out of this world. The one scout is holding it, and he says to the leader, "Hey, Mr. So-and-so, you better take a look at this thing. It's doing something really weird." He described now picture this, George, a 2-inch wide, let's just say beach ball, 2-foot wide beach ball. He described a glob coming out of the side of this thing as being like when you blow a bubble through a wand as a child.
Okay.
So this thing is coming out of the side of this orb and making its way down to the ground. And what blew their mind was the fact that what was coming out and going to the ground was like 20 times or 30 times the volume of the orb itself. And yet the orb was unchanged, and this thing was attached to it. Now they start to see a Bigfoot appearing in this secondary glob coming down, and they described it as being like in a state of suspended animation. It wasn't moving whatsoever, but they were certain to what they were looking at. At some point, the glob separates from the orb, and now you have like this tower of blue and white light with this Bigfoot in it and the orb sitting separately. It was then that they said the bluish white light that was surrounding the Bigfoot starts to dissipate, where now the creature was left standing in the light of the circular orb. And then they said it started to move. At that point, they got out of Dodge, ran down the trail.
Can't blame them.
Yeah, I can't blame them. They broke camp, and while they were breaking down the tents and everything just to get out of the place, looking up on the mountain, they saw that the orb, which they had originally seen, was back to darting around in the woods, which got their attention initially. And what had happened to this Bigfoot, they had no idea, and nor did they care to, you know, go shake hands with it. So it's very, very bizarre. And you're talking, you know, 7 scouts, you know, 4 boys, 3 men. You know, I don't even know what to say about that, you know. And yet this is something that was passed on.
You've talked about wood knocking that people are hearing. What's going on with that? What's that phenomenon?
Well, you know, this is one of the things that we see on the television. Relative to Bigfoot, people running around knocking on trees with bats and sticks. They apparently believe that this is some type of communication between Bigfoot. You knock, they knock back, or they're signaling each other in the woods. But this is really odd. This account came to me, and to me, if you believe this, it really disproves the wood knock. Because according to this couple, this guy's name was Frank Maselli. He was a semi-pro landscape photographer. And he and his wife were in an area called Lower Crabtree Meadows in 2017, July. So this was fairly recent. The two of them were walking into this area to take some panoramic pictures. Now, some of this guy's pictures are actually online for sale, so he says. So he also commented that, I don't know when somebody is touted to be a professional, but he had been doing it for 25 years and never considered himself to be a professional. At any rate, they're in this valley taking pictures, and there was nothing in the valley. They hadn't seen any animals in there, no elk. There was nothing around. And they heard a loud knock emanate through the valley. So he's got his camera set up on the tripod. The wife has a pair of binoculars, and she starts scanning around and says to her husband, I see something pacing around over there on the hillside. And he says, what do you mean you see something pacing? She says, I see something. There's something on two legs over there pacing around on the hillside.
Two legs. That's
two legs. So he swings his camera around using the telephoto lens. He's trying to look through there. She's got it. Now he sees it. And he says, even though it was so small in his lens at the distance he was looking, he knew it was a Bigfoot. There was nothing else around there. And he described it as looking like a nervous man waiting for a bus. This thing was just like pacing back and forth, swinging its arms up in the air. Like he said, a nervous man waiting for a bus.
Seemed very alert, too.
Yeah, well, so then they're watching this thing. It stands still, raises its head up into the air like a howling wolf, puts its hands by its side, just like you or I would do to push our voice forward, and then they hear the knock, you know. Well, I can't even do it, but, you know, like if you click your tongue against the roof of your mouth. You got it, George.
Just like that.
Only like, you know, a thousand
times louder.
Human sound effects. So he said it wasn't a knock at all, but it was more a vocalization that the creature was able to do somehow with its throat, its tongue, its mouth. Who knows? You can't ask him questions. But he said it was not a knock at all. So that was really, you know, interesting that somebody had caught such a thing, you know?
Is it, in your opinion, is it ape-like or man-like?
I don't know, George.
You're baffled by it, aren't you?
Yeah, it's its own thing, you know.
An ape will walk on fours. Very rarely will an ape walk just standing upright. It uses its arms and its knuckles to kind of move along, as a chimpanzee does too. This seems to stand upright all the time.
Not so.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, people have encountered them hitting all fours.
It would look like a bear to me if it did that.
Yeah, but a little different. I'll give you, this is really a strange encounter. This was called the balloonist sighting. This guy had been given a gift certificate by his new wife for his birthday for a balloon ride.
He always wanted one, I bet.
He was afraid of heights, and his wife didn't know it. So the day came when they went to meet up with this balloonist out in the field. And he was scared out of his wits, but he fought through it, and they went for a ride. And he asked the guy to try to keep the balloon as low as possible. And the guy kind of winked at him and said, you let me know when you're getting really uncomfortable. And he said they were about 500 feet drifting over this farmland and woodland. But here's what happens, which is really unusual. They got to a point in their flight. There were other people in the gondola with them, by the way. It wasn't like just him and his wife. There were probably five or six people in there. They got to a point where the pilot of the balloon lowered the balloon over a wooded area so that the gondola was scraping the branches. And they came down and did that, and everybody was cheering and everything, you know, trying to grab a leaf off the tree and all of this. Then he lifted it back up again. As they made it across the next field, he did it once again. He lowered it down, and they're just moving slowly along, scraping the treetop, and they all started cheering. Now, he said you'd think they won the lottery the way the people were carrying on in this gondola. But here is where the Bigfoot comes in. When they're scraping over the second series of trees that was bordering a field, busting out of the tree line as the balloon is guided along, gliding along, comes this Bigfoot. He starts out walking quickly, looking over his shoulder, and the guy said, I swear he was looking directly at me. Everybody said, look at that. And one lady snapped a picture of the thing. They kept gliding. You can't control the balloon. This fellow said that after this thing took several, you know, very long and fast strides walking, it hit the deck on all fours and took off. He said it looked like a racehorse at the Belmont racetrack. Jeez.
See, that's unusual, isn't it?
Well, I mean, you know, I've heard of this. I have a story in one of the books I called Along Came a Spider, where these guys were hog hunting. So here we go. Back, I told you I had some accounts of feral hog hunting.
Yeah.
These guys were hog hunting, and they were sitting in a field coming up on dusk, waiting for the honks to come down out of the trees. There were already some out in the field. They were in the tall grass, and the grass was sporadically patched. In other words, there were clear areas and areas of high grass working away around this field. They saw what he described as a furry army helmet sticking above the grass. That's what they were looking at. All they saw was like this dome of black fur. They were watching this thing moving through the grass in spurts, similar to like a spider when it moves quickly and stops, quickly and stops. Finally, they catch this thing crossing an opening between two patches, and it's heading towards the hogs that they were looking at, which was still far away. When this thing came into the opening, he said it looked like a 10 or 12 foot long spider on four legs with the head sticking up. What they saw was the head. It scurried into the bushes, the grass on the other side, making its way towards the hogs. And as they were watching this thing, it stood up, and when it stood up, they knew it was a Bigfoot, and this thing made a lunging leap like a Superman dive onto one of the hogs, some type of quick movement on the ground, and left the field with the hog under its arm.
What a bizarre story. William, we're going to come back and take promised phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, does the devil exist? We're going to talk about that and so much more on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, our final segment with William Machin, and we're going to take the calls. But William, before we take calls, where do we get the book, Bigfoot Terror in the Woods?
The books, there's actually four volumes. The fifth one just came out. They're available on Amazon in paperback and in Kindle format. So, you know, you can have your druthers, whether you're a Kindle user or if you like a paperback book, which I kind of favor myself. I like to feel the pages and touch the cover, George.
Old school, but nothing wrong with that.
Yep.
Let's go to Chicago. Robert's with us to get things started. Hey, Robert, go ahead, sir.
Thank you, George. George, can you hear me okay on this phone?
Yeah, we can.
Thank you. William, two first questions. First of all, have you ever seen a photo of the two Bigfoots that were captured and killed in Pennsylvania in around 1870? My goodness, this thing really looks like the real McCoy. This is in Pennsylvania now, and it's circa 1870. They're holding this one Bigfoot up, and the other Bigfoot, they have him hanging. And the second question I have is, you mentioned that you knew some men that shot a Bigfoot. What happened after the Bigfoot was shot? Why didn't he go down? What kind of ammunition and what kind of weapons did they have?
Well, here's an answer to your first question. No, I'm unfamiliar with the two Bigfoots in Pennsylvania. But I have a number of historical accounts. One of them was quite interesting that came from a photograph taken from the grandparents' house after the final grandparent had died, in which it was depicted a work camp in Virginia at the time that was set up after Roosevelt had established the protection of the parks. They needed to start making egress and access to these parks and structures so people could go in there and stay and have bathroom facilities and ranger stations. So they had assembled this civilian corps of workers, and these guys were in there basically roughing it in the wilderness in these newly protected wooded areas that were to become our national parks. And they were regularly having encounters with what they called the hairy men. In fact, in the one account in one of my books called The Hairy Men, one of these things came into the camp and tried dragging one of the men off of his cot. And the other men attacked it, throwing hand axes and grabbing guns, shooting at the thing as it ran out of their encampment. Now, the odd thing is about these things, it seems that shotgun fire has almost no effect on them. In fact, in one account called the Pheasant Hunters, this guy hit this thing at 20, 25 yards with both barrels of 7.5 lead shot, and he said the thing didn't even flinch and kept running through a briar patch. In answer to your second question about Bigfoots being shot, in my account called the Fifth Bullet, this guy was hunting in, I think it was Idaho. At any rate, he came to an area in the woods where he was confronted with mountains and a ridgeline on three sides in front of him. And he ran across what he described as a Quonset hut made out of sticks. He said this thing did not randomly form there. In fact, there was nothing about this pine forest that lent itself to having this quantity of sticks and branch boughs, or boughs and branches, formed in this type of thing. And the inside had about a 2-foot deep layer of branches as well, forming what he thought was like bedding. So his initial thought was that hunters had built this thing as like a shelter when they were out there, but that was soon to change. On this ridgeline that he had initially seen coming into the place, he was now seeing a dark figure standing at the ridge, which started to charge in his direction down the hill. Now, he estimated that this ridgeline was about 1,500 feet above the valley that he was standing in. And he said that the rate that this thing was running down the hill was impossible for a man to do. When this thing broke to the base of the ridge, he estimated now that it was about 600 to 900 yards away from his position. And at the time, he was hunting with a vintage Korean War vintage M1 carbine. As it got closer, he leveled the sight on it and pumped a round over its head, thinking he would scare it. It kept running. He described this thing as looking like the cop in the Terminator movie when that cyborg or whatever the heck they called it, the Terminator robot, was posing as the police officer, and how he was running relentlessly with the arms pumping and like nothing could stop him. He then lowered his gun, fired a second round at it. He was sure he hit it. It had no effect on him, and it kept running. He fired a third and a fourth round, and this thing kept coming at him. Now it was closing in. He squeezed the trigger on the fifth bullet, which is why I named the story the fifth bullet, and it finally dropped. And when he walked up on it, he got closer. He shot it with another round. He got even closer to it. He realized the thing was not moving and that it was done. And he left it where it was. Now, here's the thing, George. First of all, this guy's shooting this thing in self-defense. He's in imminent danger.
Right. Sure.
This thing's coming at him like a bat out of hell. He's shooting at this thing, and the bullets seem to be having no effect on him. And yet, when he saw it lying on the ground, he could see that it had been wounded. There was multiple blood patches where these bullets had actually hit it. But why these things can... Now, we all know, if you go hunting, if you don't hit a moose or an elk or a deer, if you don't get a good lung shot or a heart shot, some type of solid organ shot, these things can run. And hunters do lose their quarry not being able to find it because they can go for miles or, you know, they could just disappear on you if you don't get a good shot. But these creatures, it seems like to me, if you're going to take one of these things down, it's got to be a headshot. It's got to be in the neck or the eye or something.
But sadly, they have to take them down.
Well, I mean, what are you going to do, George?
I know. By the way, I've looked at the picture of that 1870s series of Bigfoot. They didn't have Photoshop in those days. It's a very, very intriguing picture. They've got a couple of these old hunters with the Bigfoot. They're holding him up. He's obviously dead, but it's huge. He's huge. I mean, it's just Google 1870 Bigfoot shot in Pennsylvania, and the pictures will pop up.
Amazing.
Take a look at that if you can.
And I have a diary account. I called it the Hunter's Diary. It's no longer than a handwritten letter that you would write to your wife. And in there, they're not talking about Bigfoots or anything. This is a brief account of a guy and his two friends that went up to Canada in a hunt. And he describes in detail the weapons they were using, the bullets, what they encountered, what they didn't. And about midway in the letter, he describes how his friend and the guide became a laughing stock of the camp, having reported that during the hunt, during the day's hunt, they encountered a hairy man running through the woods. And at the end of the account, which was very brief, he totals or tallies up what they had seen during the trip. And I don't have the exact numbers, but it ran something like this, you know, 12 bull moose, 10 calves, 14 deer, and one hairy man.
One hairy man indeed. Let's go next to James in Beaumont, Texas. Hey, James, go ahead, sir.
Hello. Yes, I was calling. I wanted to see what he thought of the Sierra sounds, and I want him to, I want to follow up on his answer.
Okay. The Sierra sounds. What might they be?
I didn't quite get that, George. What
vocalizations.
Go ahead, James.
Sierra vocalizations, Sierra sound vocalizations.
Well, I mean, the only thing I have on record in my books is that of people hearing them howl very loudly. In fact, in one account, a husband and wife were fly fishing with an Arapaho Indian guide in, I think it was Wyoming. And this was a camping fishing expedition. They saw a Bigfoot that was pointed out to them by the guide while they were fishing in the river.
Mm-hmm.
And the next day they moved up. They were actually going in the direction where they saw this thing walking. And they came into another area where this thing let out this roaring howl.
Almost like a train engine, isn't it?
ridiculously. The woman described it as being a sound weapon. They couldn't tell where it was coming from, and she thought it was coming from the sky. It was so all-enveloping of the three of them. And she said, I thought it was going to hurt me.
Wow.
Think about that. Think of how loud a blast it was reverberating through their bodies, and she said, I thought it was going to hurt me.
Let's go back to James for his last follow-up question. Go ahead, James.
Yes, apparently he haven't heard of the Sierra Sounds by Ron Moorhead. But anyway, they are all hoax. You know, I can let you hear it right now where he's saying, who's being quiet? And
that's okay. We don't. We cannot allow sound from outside sources without it being checked first. Just a little safety thing, William. But send it in to us, James, and we'd be glad to play it if we approve it. I'll have to do that. Have you ever heard anything, William, about sounds yourself? A howl or anything?
Here's the thing, George, and this is the irony of Bigfooting UFO research. There seems to be all of this infighting nonsense with people self-proclaiming themselves as being experts. One witness says he, when the Bigfoot smiled, he saw what appeared as two fang teeth. And expert XYZ says, oh, that's a hoax. Bigfoots don't have fang teeth. You know, there's so much nonsense going on within the ranks of people touting to be Bigfoot experts, Bigfoot hunters. I don't get involved in any of that. I take things for face value. It's like a forum for people to vent. Because in this community, people don't want to talk about things. I'll tell you a funny little story, George. I had a neighbor directly next door to me 10 years before he got divorced and had to leave his house.
Yeah.
When I was in the middle of writing these books, he was a retired cop, and he did irrigation systems on the side and repairs of sprinkler systems. I had him over my house at the end of the winter. He was replacing 5 sprinkler heads, and we sat on the porch when he was done. And I said to him, Tom, you know, I've been working on these Bigfoot books. Well, when I breached the subject with him of the weird being Bigfoot, he looks at me and says, I got something I can tell you that's weird. Now, I had known this guy for probably 10 years at the very least.
And never did he let on, did he?
Never. So it's a comfort thing. He goes on to tell me while he was on duty with a rookie in his car, about 5 miles north of me, which is a very congested area, he and the rookie saw and chased a UFO up the street. And when it disappeared out of sight, he told me it looked like the old TV set when you turned it off and the light went into like infinity.
Right. Weird.
He only shared it with me because he felt comfortable after I had breached the subject. And this is why I share with people all the time. I have thick skin, and I'm willing to take the punches with the best of them. I've been laughed at. The big Cheshire cat smiled like, you got to be kidding me. You would be astonished at how many stories about angels, about UFOs, none about Bigfoot, to date anyway, that people have shared with me after I opened the door by sharing with them.
I believe that. Bigfoot Terror in the Woods Sightings and Encounters, William Sheehan. William, when's your next book out? I have a feeling you never stop.
Well, you know, 5 is just coming out. It's actually on Amazon right now for approval. And 6 is being proofread as we speak. So I'll see where I go from there.
Okay, keep in touch. And I'm interested in your Catholic blogging work, so I'll be watching what you do, okay?
Very good, George. And thanks so much to you, and thanks so much to the Coast listeners for giving an ear to me tonight.
They are indeed the best. William Sheehan, the name of the book again, Bigfoot Terror in the Woods. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lone Hood, Sean LaDesure, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, Tim Banal, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.